All right. I'd like to welcome everybody to the May 6th special meeting of the Board of Education work session on Tuesday, May 6th. I already said that. Can we have the roll call, please?
Mr. Luke?
Here.
Mr. Pleasant?
Here.
Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith's absent. Ms. Devine?
Here. All right. We'll now move into our work session. Number one on our list, on our agenda, is to review the five-year forecast. Okay. Mr. Johnson.
Yeah. Okay, I sent the five-year forecast out last week, and if you looked at that, you'd notice that there was a market improvement compared to the December five-year forecast. Just looking at the revenue versus expenditures, you'll notice in the prior years, in the actual years, we've got actual numbers for fiscal years 11, 12, and 13. You actually see a drop in revenue and a drop in expenditures there. We've had, on the revenue side, we had some state and federal funding sources that were taken away from us. That led to some major expenditure reductions. Having gone through that, with this forecast, we're seeing some rebound on the revenue side. And after having made those expenditure reductions, you'll see the blue revenue line actually stays above the expenditure line throughout the forecast, which leads to a very stable ending balance at the bottom there, actually an increasing ending balance. Key to this forecast, as well as the December forecast, was the 6 mil levy that was renewed. Was also very important to the forecast. Looking at the ending cash balance, this forecast meets the district's cash balance policy requirements. Three main factors in that policy: 7 to 15% of the previous year's actual revenue received. So we've actually got increasing revenues through the forecast, so obviously that is met. 1 to 2 months of expected expenditures. You'll see on the orange bar up there, that's assuming 1 month. So we're meeting that as well. And projected year-end general fund expenditures do not exceed general fund revenues by more than 1%. In any year during the five-year forecast. And that's another area where this forecast meets, where revenues exceed expenditures in all projected years. Looking at just our sources of general fund revenue in fiscal 14, real estate taxes make up about 40%. You've got the other state line there, about 16%. That's going to be made up of our homestead and rollback from the county auditor, which is a state reimbursement, as well as the tangible personal property, hold harmless payment, well, not hold harmless, but reimbursements that we get. That makes up the 16%. State foundation is 36%. Tangible personal property tax, 5%. That's the PUP tax that we'll talk a little bit about later. And other local revenue, 3%. That's going to be made up of, for instance, tuition, fees, student fees, those kinds of things. And it's interesting to note, local sources, money coming from our local taxpayers, makes up about 47% of our revenue, while money coming from state sources makes up a little over 52%. That's a number that's actually increasing, especially with the increase we're receiving in our state foundation funding.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to entertain questions as you go?
Or? Sure, go right ahead.
The real estate taxes, from the auditor had made a statement back in November that things were going to go down, it mm-hmm. seemed like valuations did go up. Did we see, in other words, what is that 40% previous year, 13? Do you have that?
I don't have the percent.
Is it up or down, I guess, is the question.
The dollar value?
Well, yeah. Dollar value, we actually saw a little bit of a decrease compared to fiscal 13. So looking at the prior years, we had 2 years of a slight decrease in real estate taxes, projecting a slight decrease in fiscal 15 as well, and then projecting slight increases in the out years.
And 2-3%? I mean, is that your...
Oh, not even that big.
Yeah, I think that's a misnomer. That
maybe a tenth or a couple, 2/10 of a percent.
She clearly articulated at our meeting, mm-hmm. didn't she?
Yeah.
I wonder if she was talking about one particular source, maybe like, for instance, commercial or something like that.
He's got a smile on his face.
I knew he always had a smile on his face.
I know.
I want to congratulate
you. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
But
thank
I'm
you.
Really sad.
Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Best of luck.
He's done a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Lucky. I was lucky.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway.
It's possible maybe she was speaking of one particular source within the real estate tax. I mean, for instance,
I think so.
Well, because it was the agriculture that went way up, right?
Yeah, I'm going to hit
then,
that a little bit later.
And then the commercial and residential combined for a drop. Well, but I think when everything went together, it was a pretty small change.
Yeah.
When you netted in the commercial with the residential.
I think she alluded that it was going to be significant.
Yeah.
You know.
I thought that too.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Sorry.
But, you know what, I just want to say, though, because even if the valuation drops, our revenue, shouldn't impact our revenue so much, because it's just going to make the effect of millage change for each individual taxpayer.
But I've heard that that there were valuations that were increased,
yeah.
And I guess and significant,
so did I.
Significant,
uh-huh.
And
right.
It seemed to be an older population, but that's my contact,
yeah.
And I just was surprised. I understand what you're saying,
yeah.
But I was
they were all over. I mean, there were some that went way up, and there were some that dropped.
Yeah. I know
like
somebody
70,
that
80.
Doubled.
Yeah, so it's kind of all over the place.
Well, a lot of the reasons for a lot of the increases, I mean, partly would be due to the reappraisals, but then the other part would be due to the Board of Appeals. I mean, I got a stack like that of residential properties who were appealing their valuations.
Oh, yeah.
So that's going to lead to, if my property goes down and somebody else's property goes up, to make up the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this points to, and you'll see in future slides as well, local sources staying relatively flat. I guess that's good news to our taxpayers that you know, we're not leaning on them for additional funding. So looking at again at local versus state funding, as I mentioned, the SFSF funding was eliminated in fiscal 12. The federal ed jobs money was eliminated in 13. We had the tangible personal property elimination as well. Some of those things that led to the our decreases in expenditures. But going forward, with looking at the red bars, the state revenue, House Bill 59, our current biennial budget, created the state funding formula that we're currently under, and that's led to significant increases in state funding for fiscal 14 and fiscal 15.
So with that question you had at the bottom, a little poses.
Can we go back?
No, it looks like you're going into it the next slide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big question mark, kind of throughout, a theme throughout that is very paramount to Marysville. Tangible personal property taxes being eliminated. I hate to even look at that slide, the amount of money that it was providing at one point, the peak there in 2005, just over $9 million, and then the very steep decline to the point that it was totally cut in 2010. that, and you'll see in the next slide, coming up, on the valuation side there, the green column there, tangible personal property, where the valuations were totally taken off our books as well. Speaking to the values, it was kind of a mixed bag. We had some increases, some decreases. On the agricultural side, the CAU values went up significantly from $59 million to $82 million. So that kind of really saved our Class 1 total, because the residential side actually went down just slightly. But that was more than offset by the agricultural values, to where Class 1 total actually slightly increased. Class 2, that's the commercial values, businesses. That value went down to $150 million. That was actually originally projected to decrease even further than that, so that was another factor that led to actual improvement in the forecast, as that number didn't drop as much as anticipated. And then the other big surprise in this forecast is the public utility personal property, the purple column there. That's public infrastructure like phone lines, cell phone towers, different things like that. That increased by 55%. Still trying to find out if I can get any more information as to what led to that increase. Those numbers, most of these numbers the county auditor has a hand in. That particular number is just basically dictated to the county auditor by the state. So Andrea is trying to get me find some information, just so we can make sure that, she assured me that the numbers are correct, but you just like to make sure that maybe at the state level there wasn't an issue or, because as we've seen with the tangible personal, the state giveth and the state taketh away. So.
That's correct.
Oh, I just wanted to point, overall values in total fell just right around, just under 1%. So not a huge decrease. Some of the challenges to our operating revenue, obviously once again the TPP reimbursements, the elimination of the valuation, as well as the state cutting the TPP reimbursements in fiscal year 12 and 13. Those were major factors that led to the cost reductions that the district had to implement in fiscal 14. One of the big risks that we'll be watching for is the TPP reimbursements. Those are pretty comfortable that those are in the current biennial budget. In the next biennial budget, who knows? That's something that the state could look at. I think they're spending somewhere over $450 million to districts across the state for those TPP reimbursements. So that if there is an economic problem, that could be a number they look at as a way to try to solve it. So that's definitely a risk, something we'll need to watch out for and continue to lobby our legislators to ensure they keep in mind how important that is to our district.
So when you did the forecast, which assumption did you make going out?
I assumed that the state has promised that the TPP will still be there. Those reimbursements will be there. We've seen in the past what can happen to those promises. So the forecast assumes that promise will be kept.
And that's online.
That is
1.05.
You assumed it would be kept all the way out for 5 years, right?
Yes. Yes, line 1.05. Okay, as I mentioned, the PUP tax values rose 55%. This was a big positive for the forecast. That flows throughout the forecast, assuming those values stay. There's really no reason those values would not flow through unless there was a major Board of Revisions Act by some whatever companies led to that increase. So that's where I'm trying to find out some more information. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, the state increased funding in fiscal year 14 and 15. The state economy has really rebounded well. The rainy day fund, I think, is somewhere around $2 billion right now. It's, you know, so looking better than it has in a long time. Even considering that, I think we were somewhat conservative in our assumptions going out for fiscal 16, 17, and 18 on our increases for state funding. We just assumed 2% increases. If the economy continues as it is, there's a chance they could bump that up higher. As I talk in detail in the forecast, there's really three types of districts right now. There's districts that are on a guarantee, meaning they're getting more than what the state formula says they should get. There are districts that are on the formula, meaning they're getting exactly what the formula says they should get if they get a new student and they get more funding. And then there's districts like Marysville that are capped. The formula says we should be getting about $21 million while we're only getting about $16 million. So the reason you're seeing a big increase in state funding for fiscal 15 is currently in the state budget, that cap is increasing 10%. So we'll get a 10% increase in funding. So for the out years, we're assuming 2% increases. If they were to lift that cap, we could go all the way up to $21 million. I don't see that happening in one big chunk like that, but obviously that would be a best case scenario. And I guess we kind of looked at that as a way to mitigate the risk of the TPP reimbursement. If that were to go away, you know, maybe they would look at districts like us and look at our cap funding and increase that to make up the difference a little bit.
I think you're optimistic about that.
Quite possibly. Okay, turning to expenditures. As with any school district, we are a service oriented organizations, so salaries and benefits are going to make up the majority of our expenditures. Those equate to 82% of the total. The most significant other line are purchase services. That's going to be made up mainly of our subs that we purchase, substitute teachers purchase through the ESC. Another big line item in there are our deductions out of our state foundation funding. Those show up as an expenditure and purchase service. So students that leave our district through open enrollment, students that leave the district through community schools, that's in there. That community school piece was the factor that increased this forecast in fiscal 14 above the December forecast. Based on the state funding formula, They increased the amount going to community school students, so that led to an increase. And then there was also a little bit of an increase in enrollment. And then also along with the formula, I'm not sure if this was formula related or just the particular students that were going to community schools, but there was about a $100,000 increase on the special education weighted amount of those students. So some of our special ed students are leaving the district to certain community schools, and that funding is leaving with them. The benefit piece is impacted largely by health insurance increases, obviously, and then also the Affordable Care Act is adding additional fees and also additional uncertainty going forward as to what that could do. But we're you know, monitoring that, and you know, constantly seems to be changing, changes being added. So we're staying on top of that.
And for that, you're just sticking with the 8% increase.
Yes.
Because that's what's part of the contract.
Exactly, the 8%.
But not anything above 8% would be covered by employees.
In terms of premium increases, yes.
Right, okay.
And that's assumed throughout the forecast.
Okay. Does the committee talk about that very much? I mean, like, just because everybody talks about how much insurance is going to be going up, I mean, what if it goes up 15 or 20%? I mean, I guess that's just something that we would have to discuss as part of negotiations.
I mean, it hasn't been a discussion in the committee since I've been here, which is, you know, still been a relatively short time.
Right.
But
right.
it hasn't been.
Okay.
Just looking at expenditures by object as it flows through the forecast, you can see where we actually had a dip in expenditures from 12 down to 13. But even with those cost reductions, you'll see in total the expenditures are slowly increasing each year. I do want to point out, you can tell benefits are the blue collar on there, and the benefits is the line that is proportionally increasing the fastest. And that's a theme common with a lot of school districts where the benefits costs are, you know, rising more sharply than other costs.
Todd, I'm on a 7-second delay. Can I go back to this?
Sure.
No.
Oh, okay.
Just what has been the increase on the health care? What kind of percentages have we seen in response to her 15 or 20%?
They've been low, haven't they? I mean, they have been low.
I'm
sorry, I'm
we have
the
an 8% cap that the district can see. Lynette's still here. I'll run and get her. She has a historical perspective, but we've been able to, I think this last time, stay within this 8% cap.
Yeah. So it's
they've done a great, they've done a really good job.
I think the
job.
Year before I got here, there was a pretty significant, it might have been like a 12, so there was the 4% that had to be, and don't quote me on the numbers, she would have a better historical percentage, but I know this time we stayed under the 8% cap. Because of changes we made in plans and things of that nature to try to...
So the likelihood of the 15-20% is not likely?
Well, hopefully, it could be with some of the new changes that are on the horizon.
Yeah. And really it takes just a couple catastrophic claims that can really, you know, have a major impact on that. Mm-hmm. Looking at the levy history, and again, I think this is just something important to point out for our voters, we've only had one new money issue passed since 1998. So in 2008, we had a 5 mil replacement and a 4 mil new levy that was passed. Those levies were renewed into a single 9 mil continuing levy last year. Prior to that, that new money in 2008, the last new money issue was passed in 1998. That's an 8.9 mil continuing levy at that point. So the November 2013 levy was a renewal of our five-year levy, 6 mil levy. That will expire in December of 2019. It's also important to point out levy renewals don't provide additional revenue to the district. So I think this slide really points out how the district has been very conscious of the taxpayers and conscious of how they use the taxpayers' money. And obviously looking at the current forecast, you wouldn't, based on current assumptions, there wouldn't be a levy on there until the expiration of the December 31st, 2019 levy.
I think we'll get an indication with this zoo levy, again, with no new taxes at all. I mean, mm-hmm. there's been a big push mm-hmm. for that, not that that'll affect us, but I think there will be a clue there to see how close that's going to mm-hmm. be.
And there's a lot of, I think there's a fair amount of school, well, yeah, there are a lot of school levies out there, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's
but
another good indicator.
16 years, right? Am I doing my math correctly? Since there's been new money?
Yeah.
Well, except, well, 08. Except in 08, there was 08 the four
was.
New mills.
Okay.
Yeah, so six, yeah.
And, that, along with not exactly stellar state funding either.
Right.
So.
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Can I make sure I got this right, Todd, that the next renewal is not till 2019?
Correct.
Okay.
And I'm trying to.
We kind of did that strategically. Really, we thought we'd have to be on a little closer than this forecast is showing. We thought we would probably be going on in 16. And so the idea was we'd ask for new in 16 and then have the renewal on following that, but ask for that renewal to actually be continuing. So we'd always maintain one levy on the books was the goal. It was very confusing to taxpayers, and I received that feedback coming in the door because we had three renewal levies out there. And so when we came for new, they're like, wait, you know, we just voted for this and now you're coming back. So the goal last year was to simplify our levy position, for lack of a better word. That's why we worked to consolidate the 5 and the 4. Uh-huh. And go continuing with that, which was somewhat of a risk for us at the time. Mm-hmm. And then the next one that was up, we decided, you know, let's keep that one as continuing because our community, it does like the opportunity to have one on the books, it appears, to kind of say, hey, yeah, we think you're still getting the job done. So we left that one on the books, knowing we'd have that new, and then the idea would be to spiral that renewal out, and then this one, you know, would be a 5-year or whatever we decided, and keep working so we'd always have one on the books
to be renewed
in our plan.
Voters, yeah.
Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
I probably can't explain it without my hands.
I was
watching
it. But it worked well.
It
did, yeah.
It was successful. Yeah. I have already heard from people that they're appreciative of knowing, you know, 2016. They've heard that. We put it on our brochures. I think it's great that it appears that we could maybe even make it a little further than that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, yeah. Really good news.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Turning from good news to risk factors. You know, obviously this forecast is only as good as the assumptions in it. Not to say that there's wrong assumptions, it's just that assumptions change. So it's critical. Obviously the TPP fixed rate reimbursements we've talked about, those have been promised, just as the other fixed rate, hold harmless was promised. And we've seen how that can change. So that would have a very negative impact on this forecast. We're receiving new money in the state foundation, the per people funding. We're unsure what those increases would be in 16 and beyond, even if they would be increases. I think we're assuming 2% increases, but again, that you could have a new governor, you could have a totally new foundation formula. That's a very big risk factor. Looking at our valuations. We noticed that we pointed out on that earlier slide that the commercial property values actually had decreased some, and I think we talked a little earlier as one value decreases, another will increases the effective millage. Well, we're getting really close on most of our levies where we're already collecting at the voted millage. What that means is if a property goes down, there's no room to roll up. So what that means then, we would actually end up getting a decrease in revenue. So that's something we'll have to monitor closely. And like we said, based on the assumptions in this forecast, the next levy is looking like it would be pushed out. But at the same time, we need to monitor our expenses if that's going to continue to be the case. I think with this forecast being a May update, I didn't get too into the nitty-gritty with some of our salary projections because there's still a lot of unknowns. I didn't want to go in and make it a lot worse when there also could be improvements due to additional retirements and things like that. So there's still a lot of unknowns. I think when we hit our October forecast and we've seen where our replacements are coming in and things like that, we'll have a more clear picture on those out years. So that's something we'll have to monitor as well.
Well, how does the... How do the enrollment numbers come in to these estimates?
Really, the enrollment numbers, since they've been relatively flat historically, at least recently historically, going forward, they're assumed to be relatively flat as well. That would be a risk factor if we had a large spike in enrollment. It could end up affecting our staffing. So that would be a risk factor as well.
What if the enrollments went down?
That wouldn't really have a impact on our funding, being the cap district that we are. What would happen, because we're collecting at $16 million, the formula says we should collect at $21 million. Well, the formula would then say instead of 21, it may come down to, let's say, 20. Well, we're still below the formula. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't have an impact on our revenue.
And again, the Mill Valley, whatever the Mill Valley, the farthest one, they're starting to use some of the plats now. There was over 1,000 plats that have been approved. Mm-hmm. And now they're starting to, so I don't think we're going down.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, indications are that we'll stay flat. DeYoung came in, did a study with us of the available land and our limits and our school district limits that can be developed for housing purposes. That is the only place that has any plans. So there's not any planned growth anywhere that would lead us to believe we're going to have a spike either. So,
and I guess the issue on the expenditure side with enrollment growth is it has the opposite effect. It would increase what the formula says we should be collecting, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to increase what we do collect. It just is probably going to increase that gap of what we're not collecting.
I think I understand what you're saying. So if the enrollment dropped, it actually would make it easier to the budget.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yes.
I'm not making any plans here. I'm just, just because we don't really know. I mean, we don't really know for sure what's going to happen with numbers over more than a year or two, right?
Yeah, I mean, the further you get out, the less certainty there is.
I mean, the state budget's the biggest. biggest question mark.
Yeah.
And, you just kind of have to wait and
again,
see.
The governor's race.
Right.
A lot of speculation anyways.
Yeah, right.
Education will be a hot topic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's Kasich, I mean, you know, he's now been given an okay to go on with some of his plans. And
right.
We haven't seen all those yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, any other questions?
I think you all have done a nice job of simplifying. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank Chris for our nice new. He had.
New
I tried
logo.
To plug in our new logo, the one I'd seen, the red one, and it didn't show up. So he actually had three or four
changed
different
it.
Colors on there. So
yeah, he's on top.
Yeah,
I guess.
All
right.
Okay.
Thank you, Todd.
I would just like to say, for someone who's been here a short amount of time, it is nice to see some balances at the end of that forecast.
Oh,
and we certainly were not in that position at all.
We have not seen it yet.
Todd, I'd like to give you all the credit.
I know, yeah. Wow, Todd.
But relief, better feeling. I'm not sure the right phrase to put in there, but it's certainly a different sense as you move forward and think about, you know, maintaining the great things we have.
Right.
Feels like you can breathe.
Yeah. Well, and there's been some nice increases from the state, you know, and I think we've done it. I think you've done a nice job of really looking at what we're offering, and as people retire or resign, looking at the numbers and making sure that you know we're trying to cover, but we're not trying to overload ourselves, and you know, trying to stay fiscally responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's important.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, I know Todd and I talked about a lot of the assumptions that he had in there, and I think. You know, I felt comfortable that they were all reasonable assumptions. And like he said, I think when you get to October, that's when you can really get into a little bit more. But for now, I think it was a good job.
Thank you.
Now, let's see. Let's move on to the Heritage Cooperative Tax Abatement.
And if it's okay with you, I'll kind of just kind of hit them both together because okay. I mean, really it's they are, you know, you can't really look at one and not the other because they are kind of combined in some senses. It's hard to figure out how to handle this. So what I thought I would do is just kind of try to stay out of the weeds as much as possible, or just really boil it down, just get some major points, and then if you want to go into the weeds, we'll go in there. So I thought I would start at the top. So you know, for me, it's hard coming in, you know, just not knowing some of the history and all this, all these things, and then seeing immediately these TIF agreements coming across and trying to, you know, just figure out, you know, is this fair? We've got the partnership with the city. What are the financial impact? Trying to combine all those things, not knowing the history. I spent a lot of time looking through these things. And I guess to help me understand where we were or where we are with this, to put it into perspective that I could understand, I had to look at what the opportunity cost was, what are we giving away by agreeing to this, as well as what's the long-term impact, not just, you know, what's the impact right now. So with that in mind, I ran some numbers, and again, these were things that just helped me understand it. I don't know if not everybody's mind works the same, so we'll see if this is any value to you as well. So starting with the Meyer TIF, what I wanted to understand is, just so I had a baseline, what if Meyer came in and there was no TIF at all? That's not a realistic number because most likely they're not coming if there's not a TIF.
Right.
But I think that gives us a baseline of where to start. So they're assuming valuation of about $10 million, okay? I'm going to stay out of the weeds, so if you want to know how the calculation works, stop me and I'll get into the weeds. But if there were no TIF, based on our current millage, that would bring in about $196,000 annually in tax revenue. I looked at it on a 20-year period because the city is proposing a 20-year TIF. So over a 20-year period, that's about $3.9 million.
And can I just, that $10 million valuation, where are you getting that?
From the city.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Or I guess more accurately from the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay,
so the 196 was annually what?
Annual tax revenue.
Okay.
If there was no TIF.
No TIF, mm-hmm. Right.
Tax mm-hmm. revenue total or that would go to the schools?
That would go to the schools.
Okay.
So from there, I wanted to see, well, what if the city offered a TIF that was at the level where the board doesn't have to approve it. So any mm-hmm. TIF over 10 years and 75%, the board has to approve. Mm-hmm. They want to offer Meyer a 20-year 100% TIF. That's why, as a board, you're having to, this is coming to you for approval. So if the city were to offer a 10-year 75% TIF, there would be no board approval. They could do that. So calculating that, the annual tax revenue from that would be $49,000. And this one gets a little more complicated, so bear with me here.
And that's to offer the 20-year 100%?
This is to offer a 10-year 75%.
Oh, 10-year.
Mm-hmm.
Where we wouldn't have to vote
75%.
If they would have offered that.
Equals $49,000, okay.
And the reason I look at this option is, and I guess I look at, well, if the board were to say we're not going to approve this, what's mm-hmm. the likely scenario? Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure, but to me a likely scenario is they would go to, well, what can we offer without board approval?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to me, this would be that case. Mm-hmm. So that's the tax side, but with TIFs, there's also an income tax sharing component when the salaries for that entity is over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if there is a TIF salaries for Meyer are over $1 million, mm-hmm. then and there's income tax generated, we would split that income tax with the city. Okay? So I in talking with the Chamber of Commerce, I've assumed, and I think this is conservative, $5 million in payroll, which splitting that with the city would lead to $37,500 of annual income tax sharing revenue, or over the 10 years of the TIF life, under this assumption, $375,000. To get to, and again, just so that comparing in the long term, you've also, this was only a 10-year TIF, so I have to add in the 10 years after the TIF is over, add that number in. So in total, that one's about $2.8 million.
Over 20 years.
Over 20 years. So, like I said, looking at the opportunity cost, looking at, you know, what is the district's sacrifice, or, you know, what mm-hmm. in this partnership, what are we giving up? Mm-hmm. In this scenario, we'd be giving up a little over $1.1 million.
And that's for the 10-year 75%?
Yes.
Can I have that figure again?
$2.8
million? That's what we would get and give up $1.1.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
And that would be sharing the
income tax?
Yes, that would include if we shared the income tax revenue. Okay, so now it dropped down to what is proposed. What, you know, what's on the table, what they're asking you to vote on.
Okay.
And I should point out that the Meyer agreement as well as the Heritage agreement, both of those are structured based on the EDIP agreement, the Economic Development Incentive Policy that was approved by the school board and the superintendent back in 2006, I believe. Okay, so just want to, just to be fair, point that out. That these mm-hmm. these things fall into line with that policy. So, and again, this is relatively complicated as well. But the proposal, there's a formula that takes into account the percentage of revenue that the school gets based on our millage. It takes our millage and reduces it by 20 mils, then looks at the total millage that Meyer would be paying taxes on, comes up with a percentage, multiplies that percentage by the total real estate tax collected, and that's our TIF payment. Okay, so without getting too deep there, what that equates to, and it really, it's, the percentage is about 47%. So of the total real estate taxes that Meyer pays, about 47% would come back to the district, okay? And what that equates to annually is about $126,000. Now, also worth pointing out on that proposal, as part of the EDIP, the board would be foregoing the income tax sharing component. So that's a piece that we would be giving up. Like I said, that's estimated about $37,500 per year. So with a 20-year agreement, $37,500 times 20.
Okay. And we're foregoing that because the value of our real estate tax is more than half of the combined taxes.
It's not the same with that. That's with the Heritage.
Oh, okay.
With Meyer, this is a different type of agreement.
Okay.
And with this one, it's just waived.
Okay.
From what I read, it's just mm-hmm. we're basically agreeing to waive it.
Okay.
The way it's written.
Yes.
And this proposal is the one that they want to offer with the 20-year 100% TIF.
Yes.
Okay.
And again, that was $126,000 annually?
$126,000 annually in revenue.
Okay.
Okay, and again, and again, this was helping me understand it. I may be muddying the waters, but for me, what that equated to in comparison for the 20-year period is $2.5 million of total revenue.
That helps a lot.
Okay.
That helps a lot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, conversely, as opposed to just looking at what are we getting, mm-hmm. I wanted to look at what are we giving. This is,
right.
is a partnership with the city. You know, we're giving something up to help spur economic growth. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to look at is by agreeing to this proposal, you know, what is the district giving up? So I did a calculation there based on our current millage, based on the estimated valuation of Meyer. The number that we would be giving up as compared to no TIF at all, and again, that's mm-hmm. the hard part. To say we were giving it up because there's no TIF at all, again, there's,
yeah,
you know, Meyer's plan is coming without a TIF.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that it's a real number.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that number is $147,000 annually. And that does not take into account the income tax sharing piece.
So we're giving up $147,000 annually.
Yes.
From this plan.
And again, that's not even taking into account the $37,500 annually for the income tax sharing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm having trouble picturing this. Meyer has already built, they've already built the store.
Yes.
But they don't have these agreements yet.
Okay, so we can go back to the history a little. This is probably a good time to pass this out as well. Now that
I want to ask you a quick
sure.
question. How are you coming to 100? Because if I look at the revenue for option one with no TIF, it was $3.9 million. And then the proposed is 2.5. So the difference is 1.4 million. Divide that by 20 years, and I get 70,000 a year.
You're comparing it.
The total.
Okay.
Yeah, the total revenue of option one, no TIF, of $3.9 million with option three of $2.5
million. I see what you're saying.
Because under the no TIF and then the 75% TIF, you mentioned 1.1 million mm-hmm. give up, and that's that same logic. 3.9 compared mm-hmm. to 2.8 mm-hmm. is 1.1.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be redundant.
It's okay.
I can do that, man.
Hey.
Well, are you saying that we're giving up 147 and only getting 126. Maybe that's the difference.
Yes, that's the amount we're giving up is the 146. But Sue's making a good point. That the calculation, I took the valuation. I basically did the converse of the proposal.
grand times 35%. Picture in the paper.
The hard hat picture? Or with Corey.
No, like
Corey,
picture.
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, that was nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was a good
hard
day.
Hat picture a long time. Yeah,
I know.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, it was a good day.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Now, the other comparisons are comparing revenue from one to the other. What this one is taking account is the total sacrifice. So what I'm saying there is, over here we're getting only based on 25% of the value do we get real estate taxes. Okay, because the other 75% is TIFT. It's abated. Mm-hmm. We don't receive any revenue based on that valuation. So over here, I'm assuming, so we've got only 35% of the $10 million due to assessed taxes from the county auditor. 75% of that is what's being abated. So that's the school district agreeing to allow 75% of their taxes to not be collected. So that's where we come up with the total, taxes foregone, because you're also taking into account total 75%, whereas before I was comparing how much revenue did we collect with this option, how much revenue do we collect with this option, and then subtracting, as opposed to looking at the total taxes foregone due to having a TIF.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So he's working with real dollars there, where you're trying to compare the same thing with all three proposals.
Previously. Yeah. Previously, it's just looking at three proposals. This
mm-hmm.
is looking...
Now you're looking at...
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, when I look at this, I agree with you. I mean, I think it's nice to have those numbers of what we would collect if there were no TIF, but... The fact that that whole area is a TIF area
right.
makes it.
Absolutely.
I don't know that that's really, I don't know if you can realistically look at that. So then if I look at the difference between two and three, you know, going, if they went ahead and just offered the TIF where they knew they didn't need our approval versus this one where they do need our approval, then the difference between those, on your calculation is $300,000,
mm-hmm.
which is $15,000 a year. I guess is that. I mean, that's one way to look at.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Okay. Back to Brian's question.
Mm-hmm.
This is some information regarding, according to the Chamber of Commerce, Eric Phillips, He had passed this information, passed this on to me, that the orange area shows where the Meyer TIF is.
Thanks.
Don't get that.
Yeah, I kept a copy.
Okay.
I was the errand boy today.
And then also provided a map showing the owners of each area.
When did you guys get this?
Today.
Oh, yeah. I picked this up.
Hot off the press.
Yeah. And I guess the whole point with this information is that the Chamber of Commerce is contending that the Meyer area was originally supposed to be part of that TIF, and for whatever reason, whether it would have been an error somewhere, it was left off.
Well, are you talking about the church?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I was on council during that time. Mm-hmm. And my guess is that that was an error. I mean, that was our first one that we'd done, and we were trying to get as much of, and I'm not trying to say.
Well, yeah.
But it's that part of the church. If there was a building on the site, it would be different, but there wasn't. It was just the land, and the land should have been part of the TIF.
Right.
So. Well, I guess what I was asking, and because I'm just having trouble picturing it, like Meyer decides it would be a good idea to build a store here, and they go ahead and do it. But wouldn't normally they get this approval before they would?
Well, I can't answer that for certain, but I think my assumption is that at the point that they were offered that, I think they thought it was part of the TIF.
Well, who would know that?
That's my understanding as well from Eric, that they believe that that was part of the TIF and discovered later that it was not.
I'm not sure he mentioned that at the board meeting last month. If he did, I missed it.
Okay.
But it just seems relevant to me because it's one thing to approve this, knowing that Meyer thought they had it when they came in. It's another thing to approve it with the knowledge that they had no assurances of anything like this.
Well, and really, Meyer's going to pay the same taxes regardless.
It's just where the tax money's
going to go. It's just where the tax money's going to go.
It doesn't impact them directly that way.
Okay.
Right. Right.
Same thing with the Heritage Agreement, which we haven't really touched on yet. Mm-hmm. Heritage is already there. Mm-hmm. This agreement, what the board votes on, will have no impact on Heritage. It only will impact where the income taxes they pay go, whether it's split with the school district or whether it all goes to the city.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so going back to the Meyer, I mean, the real purpose for the TIF with Meyer is to help pay for the infrastructure, for building all the roads back there and all that kind of stuff. So,
and to help pay off the debt.
Right, help pay off the debt
of the issued to,
right, to develop that,
yes,
whole area,
okay,
both Coleman's Crossing and City Gate.
And again, I don't have all the language here, but if they're successful over the 20-year period, there's additional incomes that could be coming our way, but you can't plan on that.
Right. But I mean, you'd like to say if they can't get the debt paid off and all that kind of stuff, and things go downhill, that's
our loss.
Yeah, that's our loss too. I mean, so you want to encourage that growth. If everybody feels like that's a been positive thing out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think? I mean, those of you who've been around longer, mm-hmm, does that make sense?
Does the TIF make sense? You know, you're talking to the wrong guy. Because again, I believe that it's part of a global city plan to help development. Now, if we're looking at dollars, which Todd's the dollar guy, we're talking about, and make sure I'm correct here, a difference between the 75% and the 100% of about $300,000.
Yeah.
Over a 20-year period. Now, but we're also, you know, we're going to. It seemed that, and the assumption that Todd made is that if we voted down, that they'll go to the 75%. I'm not, you know, I don't know what that discussion was. But
you're right. The dollars are not huge.
over a 20-year period.
I mean, really, with those that assumption between option two and three that you laid out, dollars are not very big. But I'm just talking about the whole idea of it.
Well,
of them, yeah.
If you're a developer, when the Coleman property was just vacant farmland, for a developer to come in and to put in paved roads, sewage, and water out of pocket, and then, you know, put up for sale signs and hope to sell something, is usually a lot more of a risk than what a developer wants to take on. And so I think my understanding is that the TIF allows the city, which would like to see growth, and the developer put together a plan, and the city says, you know, we will use the property tax, you know, we will back this development. There's some letters of guarantee to the banks, and you know, they have to do all the financing and so forth. But the bank is told that the tax dollars that are collected in this area will now go not to the developer, not to the city, but to pay off the streets and sewer and all that kind of stuff. And the city, I think that the city guarantees those, or the developer or somebody guarantees those annual payments. But most large-scale development in central Ohio, just about everything I read, has a TIF involved in it, you know, to some, you know, or an agreement of some kind. Because, you know, the developers come in and say, you know, we've got this great idea, we've got, you know, some money, mm-hmm. but we don't have all of it. And so can the community come up with some of it? And if this all comes to fruition, everybody's going to benefit.
Where are we coming up with the $300,000?
The difference between $2.8 million and $2.5 million.
Oh, okay.
And that's over 20 years.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And again, that is, like Ed said, that is an mm-hmm. assumption. I don't know. I just had to pick a
right.
point for me for comparison purposes. What if?
Right.
So that's a big what if. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, for me, I cannot picture all the details of those kinds of things behind this enough to know whether this is a good idea. So part of it for me is political, but in terms of the city asking for this and the relationship between the schools and the city might be the most important thing. Does that seem right to anybody?
Yeah.
That definitely plays into it.
Especially
you
when
know.
You see that the amount is not really that large.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think the other thing is just when you look at that whole area, all of the yellow there, and that one little orange. I mean, I think it kind of goes back to the fact this was the first one that we did. So, okay. You know, if we went back and did it again, I'm guessing this whole thing would be yellow, and we wouldn't be sitting here today talking about it.
I
you
mean.
Know,
yeah.
So it gives us a chance.
And I don't want to muddy what Dick just said, but it did get complicated. You had one developer that came
yes.
in, didn't have enough money.
Right.
Another one came in and put up six.
Right.
It really was a very difficult time.
Right. And I think if you look at that development, you look at the area and what's in City Gate and what's mm-hmm. in Coleman's Crossing, I think it's been a nice benefit to Marysville. That's a pretty hopping place out there, you know.
And Myers is going to give Walmart and Kroger's
right.
their money.
Right. That's right. That should give us, you know, competition.
Sure.
Supposedly will improve our options.
I think the traffic's going to be a problem.
Yes, I'm going to stay on my end of town. Yeah. Okay.
But well. I think your assessment, Brian, is as good as any.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I came in and Todd and I had a brief conversation this afternoon. The area in orange is actually, there's two parcels.
Okay.
and this map, and I don't know why, but this map shows the two, has lines that divide.
Yeah.
And there's a drive that goes alongside of Myers, between Myers and Crazy Burrito, that goes and provides the access to the property in the back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think this agreement only applies to the property that Meyer developed. Mm-hmm. It does not include the remainder of the property that New Beginnings still owns. Is that...
They're going to still hold on to it?
Well,
I think Eric would like to extend it to that property.
Yeah.
And with the thought that they may put it up for sale.
Right, right. And that, and you know, I mean, I think it's one of those things. Why wouldn't you put it in there? Because even if New Beginnings would decide to build a church, until they do, it's a taxable piece of land.
Yeah. You know? God, to me this afternoon, pointed out, if that's added, then that's another give back, an additional.
Right.
At this point, maybe not much, but an additional give back by the school.
Right.
That increases the difference between the potential of what the district could receive and the actual of what the district could receive.
That's great. Okay.
So what's your feeling on this, Todd?
I thought I got out of this.
Not that easy.
And I'll help you. He's a number guy. So, I mean, I would expect him to say that the, and to some degree he has, the 75% is the drop back, and it should be the one that takes place. I mean, I would understand that.
I don't know if I would go that far to say that we should do this or that. I do feel that it is generous.
The TIF as it's written now is generous.
Yes. But, you know, but I'm saying from a financial perspective, it is generous. But you've got the fact that this was supposedly part of the original agreement. So if the intent was it all should have been part, then that's another factor. And then obviously the partnership with the city is very important as well. So to balance those, you know, it's easy for me just to look at the financial aspect, but we can't look at that in isolation without the other factors as well.
Right.
Got to be with the mayor in 2 hours.
Okay. On this?
No.
Oh.
No. Okay. Over an adult refreshment.
Okay.
Oh. And where is it that we should meet?
Timberview.
Did you hear that, Diane?
And if just to, and I'll try to make this one quick, not muddy the waters, but we didn't really touch on the heritage much. And I think we've kind of hit that one pretty good in the past. So just if you want a refresher, the heritage is a slightly different agreement. And again, based on the EDIP, there's a different calculation involved in there. The real, I can just boil that one down to one question is, because if we approve the agreement for heritage, we would be foregoing the income tax sharing.
Right.
So, I mean, really that's what that boils down to. The income tax sharing piece, if we were to receive it, it's going to grow, assuming salaries grow, but in the beginning, about $9,500 annually.
And they have reached out to us. Heritage has...
Those communications have dropped off.
Have they? Okay.
I sent a copy of our curriculum, things we were interested in doing.
Right.
Aaron nor I have heard from them since.
And again, it will have no impact on Heritage.
Right.
Regardless.
Yeah, they still pay the
same. Right.
And with the end of the year, we will follow up. Aaron and I actually met about it today, but...
Okay.
I think he'd like to get through graduation.
Okay. Well, does anyone have any more questions about either of those topics?
I would say that this was helpful to me. Again, I'm a numbers guy, so that was very helpful.
Good.
So thank you.
I think it made it easy to understand, too. Yeah. I've seen lots of pieces flying everywhere, so it's nice to have it simple.
Right.
I appreciate the fact that it was, you know, organized and, you know, there was some things for me. There's times that I need to see things on paper.
Right.
And so it was helpful in that respect. Very much so.
Good. Thank you.
And I mean, as we go through this, I mean, I know you have, you communicate with the city and with Eric all the time. So, you know, you kind of reach a point. It's like how we're giving this up and what kinds of things are out there where we might work together to share some resources and things like that.
And we continue to, certainly the city has been a fantastic partner, especially last year. With helping with SRO and some other things that have surfaced, and we have a pretty good working relationship as well. It's just I also need to remember to keep these at the forefront of that negotiation as well. But
We talked a little bit about documenting things too. You know, making sure that as things move forward, you know, if you're going to share some resources, that there's things in writing, and you know, so that if something should happen to anybody in here, that there's some history there.
Yes.
Moving forward. So. Okay. Great. Well, thank you, Todd.
Yep.
All right. I think with that,
if there's anything else you need to know between now and then for the board meeting, so we'll be on the agenda. Mm-hmm. Make sure you contact Todd if you have a question when you leave here or whatever, because we'll be putting it on the agenda.
And I would recommend that maybe you take a little bit of time to think about some things that you might either want to ask or comments that you want to make, referring to our work session, so that the public does know that we have discussed it and, you know, we're not just blindly voting on anything. So, I mean, it's important to know that we've thought about it and we didn't just come into the meeting and say, oh, let's see, what's this? Yeah, I'll vote on it. So if you can think of some comments you would like to make, that would be great. With that, we need a motion to move into executive session. For the purpose of ORC 121.22G number 1.
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Pleasant moved and Mrs. Powers second. We have a roll call.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries and we are in executive session at 5:51. Okay, guys. I forgot to